Fund Truck versus SEC, Mr. Rush.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Today the Court is presented with extraordinary facts unlike any we could find.
You know what's so strange about this case? I don't understand. The only relief you're asking for in your complaint, if I understand correctly, you just want to you just want to stop their suit, right? The SEC's suit.
Yes, we would like
to. Now the SEC suit is pending in this, you know, in the district court here in front of Judge Anderson.
That's
so
correct.
Why on earth do we have two lawsuits here?
The
why don't you just interpose, you know, your defense that this is some kind of prosecutorial abuse, and let Judge Anderson consider it in the SEC's case? Are we going to have a situation where every time the government brings a lawsuit, the defendant peels off some of his defenses and makes it the basis of an independent suit against the agency?
No, Your Honor, that is not what we're asking for. We think the facts in this case are so extraordinary.
It doesn't matter what the facts are. You have a perfectly adequate remedy, which is to interpose these facts and any defense that can be built on them in the SEC's case before Judge Anderson.
I think that question can be posed to the SEC as to whether we present this as a defense, whether we will win the case, should we prove
it. Well, look, if it's no good as a defense, it's no good as the basis of an independent suit. And if it's good as the basis of an independent suit, good as a defense. How can it make a difference to the outcome whether you bring a suit or you interpose a defense?
Because the very relief we seek is to avoid having to go through the agony.
So say to Judge Anderson, you know, move to dismiss the SEC's case and tell him, look, we have this defense. We'd like you to examine it first because we don't want to go through the agony, et cetera, and have Mr. Buntrock's name dragged through the mud. And if there's any merit to that, well, then Judge Anderson can, take that defense first.
At least two courts that have addressed this question directly have found that it is not an adequate remedy at law merely to punish.
Well, that's ridiculous. What's the merely about it? What does it mean bringing a lawsuit and saying stop this other case and same judge, same court, going into the other case and saying stop this case now because, you know, this is terrible abuse? Why have two lawsuits to deal with the same issue?
Because the first lawsuit needs to be dealt with in the first instance before the second lawsuit can proceed.
No, it doesn't. I don't understand what you mean. The SEC suit has been filed. It's pending in front of Judge Anderson. So you can go to Judge Anderson and say, you know, we have this defense. We'd like you to hear it first.
I think, Your Honor, quite frankly, Judge Anderson has already ruled. He's already concluded there is no law to apply.
Sure he has, but that doesn't excuse you having filed an improper suit. That is, if, as I am suggesting, your remedy was to interpose the defense in front of Judge Anderson, well, you didn't do that.
Well, we have not even filed an answer yet, Your Honor. The case is 6 months old. Answers have not been filed. Discovery is ongoing. Millions
what
of dollars.
Discovery is ongoing. Look, whatever information you had that on which you based this lawsuit, you could have presented to Judge Anderson in the other lawsuit.
We've not even gotten to answer to file an answer yet. We're not at the pleading stage yet.
So you're going to be forbidden. You're forbidden to move to dismiss on the basis of prosecutorial misconduct. Is that what you suggest?
We'd have to file essentially a motion for summary judgment. That's the purpose of a pleading. When you seek an injunction,
look, do you think that if there are limitations on filing summary judgment or motion to dismiss, you can simply You can avoid them by bringing an independent lawsuit? So now every time there's a lawsuit brought by a federal agency, the defendant is going to say, oh, well, I mightn't be able to interpose this defense by way of motion to dismiss. I don't want to have to wait 6 months to do discovery. I'm going to bring a lawsuit against the agency. That's the way I'm going to make my That's the way I'm going to present my defenses. You're going to have multiplication of lawsuits.
Your Honor, I would agree with you to the extent the defense has an issue dealing with the merits. If you try to raise a defense as to the merits of the allegations of the complaint through a separate complaint, I believe Your Honor is absolutely and positively correct. In this case, that is not the merits, that is not the challenge that Buntrock makes here. Buntrock makes the challenge that there was an irreconcilable conflict of interest which prohibited the agency from acting at all.
And you don't have a defense, if you don't have a defense on the merits, then your case is an even bigger loser.
Your Honor, we do have a defense.
Because you can't head off a lawsuit against which you have no defense on the merits by bringing a separate lawsuit.
Your Honor, I think you've hit exactly upon it. We do have a defense on the merits. The defense which attacks the process by which the case came to be is a separate kind of an argument. It's a separate kind of a claim.
It's separate from a lot of things, but when you're sued, you interpose all your arguments in defense against that suit, whether they're procedural or statute of limitations, whether it's prosecutorial abuse, whatever it is, selective prosecution, discrimination, anything you want, you put in by way of defense. There's no limit on what defenses you can plead and present by motion, do whatever you want. You don't have to bring a separate lawsuit.
But the remedy we seek is that the lawsuit cannot itself go forward at all.
Sure, then look, but that's like, suppose you're sued by the SEC for selling rotten grapefruits. And you say, this is ridiculous. The SEC has no jurisdiction against rotten grapefruits. Now, what are you going to do? Bring a lawsuit against the SEC saying, don't bring this lawsuit because you have no jurisdiction over grapefruits? Or are you just going to interpose a defense in the suit and say, this suit is beyond the jurisdiction of the SEC, so dismiss it?
Yes, that's a pure question of law. You can do that based on the allegations of the complaint. Pursuant to a 12B6.
No, look, suppose they say the SEC says no, these look like grapefruits, these are actually stock certificates. It's a question of fact. You're still not permitted to bring an independent lawsuit.
That's a defense to the merits, Your Honor.
Look, a defense that the agency is trying to bring grapefruits under the Securities Act, why is that any different from saying the agency is bringing a suit that's improper because of conflicts of interest in their staff? They're both defenses that don't go directly to, you know, the issues of fraud and so on and remedies, but they both can be presented as defenses.
Your Honor, I would point you to the language of your case in General Finance Corp, in which you said that a challenge to the process by which the investigation should precede any ruling on the sanctions.
And that's fine. So you tell that to Judge Anderson in the SEC's case. You say, look, Judge Anderson, before you get into remedies and questions of fraud and so on, I want you to rule on this threshold issue that the suit should be barred by these conflicts of interest. And he can do that, and he can... I mean, what you're doing, obviously, you're jumping the tracks in order to get us to appeal, get us to consider on appeal this issue, which would ordinarily be the subject of an interlocutory ruling by Judge Anderson. You have to wait till the end of the case.
And that's exactly why we are being denied an act.
Right, and we don't want a situation where people who want to take interlocutory appeals do so by making their defenses the subject of independent lawsuits.
But that entirely defeats all the relief that Mr. Buntrock seeks. Should he go through the whole trial? Your Honor, I see my time is up.
Look, this is true with anybody who's sued for fraud. Anybody who's sued for fraud can complain that, you know, I'm not guilty and I don't want to be dragged through years and, you know, made to incur enormous legal fees and my reputation demolished and so on. Anyone could argue that, but the fact is, ordinarily, if the trial judge rejects your arguments, you have to go through the whole trial. What's special about this?
Because the whole relief we're seeking is that we shouldn't be here in the first instance.
But that would be true of someone who's falsely accused of fraud. Someone falsely accused of fraud shouldn't be dragged through the court.
That should be challenged on the merits. A merits challenge should be rolled up with the merits litigation. I agree with that, Your Honor. This is not a challenge to the merits. We have an independent...
So what if it were a statute of limitations argument? Would you do that? That wouldn't be connected with the merits. Well, so would you say that could be the subject of an independent suit?
No.
The SEC sues Buntrock for something he did 35 years ago. Well, he'd plead the statute of limitations as a defense. If Judge Anderson rejected the defense, he'd have to wait till the end of the case to appeal.
And that can be done.
So your argument would be that, yes, he should be able to bring a suit in which he says the SEC's suit is barred by the statute of limitations, so that's the only way he can avoid being dragged through the mire of the suit.
My time is up,
isn't
Your Honor.
Isn't that the logic of your position?
No, Your Honor, it is not.
Well, what's the difference?
The difference is on a statute of limitations case, the motion can be brought on the face of the complaint brought in the enforcement action. It would say Mr. Buntrock committed this fraud in 1947. We could then move and say, assuming the fact...
Sure, you could move, and then the government would say, well, yes, but there was equitable tolling or there was fraudulent concealment or something. You have factual issues concerning the statute of limitations. They're just separate from the merits. And just because there are factual questions dealing with the statute of limitations defense, that doesn't mean you can bring a lawsuit to interrupt another lawsuit in order to determine the statute of limitations issue first.
The sum and substance of our argument is the act of authorizing the enforcement action was illegal. It was against the law. And to say the relief to you is to go through the enforcement action, go through the execution, and then once the execution's over, we'll take it up on appeal. It's too late, Your Honor. The damage is done. The injury is lost. If the ruling here of the court is they wait until the end, then I posit to you there is absolutely no limit of any way, shape, or form on the discretion of the SEC to file an enforcement action, whether through bribery, whether through political means, no matter what the objective is, no matter what the conflict of interest is, it's meaningless. Because you have to wait until you've already won the case, and then you say, by the way, we shouldn't have ever been here.
Well, of course, you can get fees if it's a groundless lawsuit.
Well, that's an entirely different set of rules, as you know, Your Honor. There isn't a fee-shifting provision within the...
But the government, of course, can be sanctioned like anyone else for frivolous litigation.
It has to be frivolous, Your Honor.
Well,
At the threshold, you're taking discovery, and there hasn't been an answer prior. There must be some motion. Is there a motion to dismiss? Is there something under which you're taking...
We had motions to dismiss pending. Are you talking about the enforcement action, Judge Mann?
Yes.
Yes. We had motions to dismiss pending by agreement of the parties. They were withdrawn while the litigation and the discovery is going forward.
Well, you're discovering just on the basis of the complaint?
Yes, exactly, the allegations of the complaint. And I would posit that Judge Anderson's already seen our claim and has decided he absolutely has no law to apply, that the SEC's discretion is unlimited. So whether we plead it as a counterclaim or an answer, however, Judge Anderson's already issued his ruling.
Oh, of course,
we can't raise this argument. We can't state it.
Well,
and that's what we
you can raise it. You just know it's going to lose in the district court.
Well, he's not even going to entertain it.
You raise things in order to preserve them for appeal, not even if you know the judge is not well disposed toward them.
But the entire relief is defeated by going through the exercise of the enforcement action and even winning at the end of it. There is no appeal, then. What do we appeal? By the way, we forgot to tell you we shouldn't have ever been here.
Look, I wasn't the guy in the car.
That's
life, right? Every time a district judge erroneously permits a suit to proceed to completion, there's a great harm to the defendant.
Well, if the act itself in the opening is illegal and challenged on procedural grounds, I don't think you can put that off until after the entire case, which is slated to last, I think, 3 years and cost tens of millions of dollars, is over. It's an inefficient use of the judicial resources as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Rush. Ms. Harding?
Good morning. May it please the court. The district court properly dismissed Buntrock's claim against the commission for lack of jurisdiction. That dismissal can be affirmed for 5 independent reasons. 3 of those reasons come under the Administrative Procedure Act.
Well, what's your best reason?
They're all good, but my personal belief is that the 2 strongest reasons, and they do go together, would be those in Section 704 of the Administrative Procedure Act, that Buntrock is not challenging final agency action, and as you have already addressed with in the appellant's argument, that there is an adequate remedy in court. As to final agency action, it's very clear that there are two prongs of that must be satisfied for there to be final agency action. Not only must the agency's decision be the end of the agency's process, but there must be rights and obligations determined by the decision that must have legal consequences. But Brock has contended that the final decision...
Well, I found that confusing. Finality is not really the issue.
In
the conventional sense, there's no longer anything in the FEC concerning Buntrock. It's all been turned over to the Justice Department. So your real concern is that it shouldn't be reviewed, not that, you know, that if there were good reason, it would somehow be barred by lack of finality.
I believe that under the Supreme Court's decision in FTC versus Standard Oil California, which is called SoCal throughout the brief, that the decision is not a final, or the enforcement decision is not a final decision. The logic there, although the court was considering an administrative complaint, is directly applicable to a civil complaint.
Yeah, but the administrative, they issue a complaint, and then there's a proceeding before an ALJ, and then it comes back to the agency, so it really is non-final. But when they turn it over to the Justice Department, then they wash their hands of it. They have nothing more to do with Buntrock.
But that's why the two prongs of the finality decision.
Why talk about finality? Why don't I talk about what the point is? The point is not that it's non-final action; is that it oughtn't to be the subject of lawsuits, because if everybody sues agencies every time they bring these cases, you know, we just have twice as many suits.
I definitely agree with that assertion, and
every case would become two cases.
Exactly, and the way the system has been set up, and people can disagree as to its fairness or not, but clearly the system that has been set up by Congress and by courts is that defenses must be brought in the enforcement action. And a defense to enforcement action is an adequate remedy. All that Mr. Buntrock is seeking is dismissal of the enforcement action. That plainly can be attained through a defense. There's no need for a separate legal action to pursue that. And
well, he says, no, it'll be too late. His name is dragged through the mire for 3 years, and he'll spend millions of dollars, and he'll have no remedy at the end.
The courts have not been receptive to that argument. That argument has been made. Again, going back to the Supreme Court's decision in SoCal, the Supreme Court said, and it was in the context of finality, but it applies directly to the adequate remedy at law issue too. The court said that the burdens and effects of litigation are not relevant legal consequences for the purposes of the Administrative Procedure Act. Again, as I said before, the system has been set up so that everything is contained in one action, and that for purposes of judicial efficiency, that is how things are set to proceed and need to proceed.
Are these defenses then available?
Pardon?
Is the first part where the court found that they didn't have a law to apply and that sort of thing, for instance, under, I guess it's 2635.502, I guess, is there still a defense available under that, or is that already been foreclosed?
I agree that what Judge Anderson said in his opinion indicates that he will find that Mr. Buntrock has also failed to state a claim.
Now, do we have to then rule on that, whether or not he was correct?
No, that he should. This action should be brought in the enforcement action, and it can follow through the proper procedures in that action. In this case, because the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act haven't been satisfied, this court doesn't have jurisdiction on the merits.
They have an adequate remedy at law, which is where we probably should start and say that's where this ends. He has an adequate remedy at law. The question I guess I have is on the other issue of is there, just to say the collusion that he's alleged and the insider stuff and the impropriety or the perception of impropriety and all that, is that final, or is that something that this court has to recognize as an issue and either resurrect it or say it's right or wrong, or just wait until the final appeal after whatever? Was this trial set for 2005?
Right now it's set for January 2005.
Yeah, long way off. Is that where we are? Just leave this, whatever his ruling is on whether or not this, there's any authority to determine whether these people have wrongfully colluded, using all the information they gathered under another umbrella and then accelerated the SEC's process?
Yeah, that action needs to be resolved in the enforcement action. Because
of the law
of jurisdiction.
That's still alive. That's still something you can argue.
Yes,
it's still a defense. Because it's unfair to confuse the fact that this is going through all this discovery, and there isn't even an answer filed. Apparently the motion to dismiss has been withdrawn, so all this discovery is just based on the complaint.
Right. And the parties will likely refile their motion to dismiss under the procedures they've reached in the district court. But they're free at any time to take the action that they believe is appropriate to raise legitimate defenses in the enforcement action. Nothing has happened that says that if they have a concern that the commission has not acted properly and that action infects the enforcement action, they can bring that. They can bring that to the attention of the judge, and the judge will determine what procedures are appropriate. I believe Judge Posner alluded to that, that if there is a problem here, it doesn't necessarily have to wait through the full evidentiary development in the district court. Now, because there's no problem here, as I don't think this court needs to reach it, but we've argued that there's a failure to state a claim. The allegations of the complaint simply don't show that there is any impropriety in the commission's actions. Mr. Bartrock has thrown a lot of allegations around, but he has never shown how any of those allegations amount to a violation of any statute or regulation or anything else. The commission has not engaged in any impropriety, and that's part of the reason that he will not get any immediate relief, I believe. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I'm sorry. So, Mr. Rush, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute if you'd like to rebut.
I'll be very brief. Just to respond to the last point Ms. Hardy made, was anything violated? The statute itself says the SEC is to conduct the investigation. In this case, the flat allegations in the affidavit filed by the SEC admit that they did not. That's 78U. Section 78U says, commission, you investigated. SEC versus Wheeling says, that's what a defendant's entitled to.
This is like, you know, false arrest. If you're arrested falsely, well, you know, and if you give a statement or they take evidence and so on, that can be suppressed. But you can't defend against a prosecution on the ground of being falsely arrested. And that's what you're trying to do here. You're saying because there were, you know, irregularities in the decision to file this suit against you, you should be permitted to get out of this suit, even if your client is guilty. Now, that's just not our usual approach.
Your Honor, that's one step too far. We're not saying that the SEC can never file an enforcement action against Bontrock. We're saying it cannot violate its conflict of interest. Mr. Niemeyer and Mr. Herdman are gone. They're perfectly...
Oh, you mean you're just the only remedy you're seeking is to have this suit dismissed without prejudice?
I think it would be dismissed with respect to this investigation.
Right. In other words, yeah, you want dismissal with prejudice.
Well,
that's exactly what you can't get, right? Because in my false arrest example.
Well, with this investigation, the contention of Bontrock is that it cannot proceed. That is
right,
correct.
And that's where the false arrest analogy is highly pertinent. That is, the fact that an agency has committed improprieties in bringing a suit against a guilty person is not a reason for letting the guilty get off scot-free.
we're not arguing that we'd be get off scot-free.
Yes, you are, if you want dismissal with prejudice.
I don't think we're asking for a dismissal with prejudice with respect to the entire action. It just cannot be based on the investigation that's been painted by the conflict of interest. And then one final point would be the relief we're being promised. We have asked for this discovery, Your Honor. It's been denied. Judge Anderson denied us this request for discovery.
Yeah, but look, your purpose of bringing this lawsuit is to get appellate review before the end of the case. But there is a whole body of law involving interlocutory appeals, mandamus, and all sorts of things. So if you instead of bringing this suit and doubling the number of lawsuits involving Mr. Buntrock, if instead you had interposed some kind of defense in the enforcement suit and had been denied, then you might be able to obtain interlocutory, you know, might be able to take an interlocutory appeal.
Your Honor,
if you couldn't, then we certainly, I don't think, want to let you bypass the limitation on interlocutory appeal by bringing separate lawsuits.
Just a case in point, in the enforcement action, an interlocutory appeal was certified by Judge Anderson and it was refused by the Seventh Circuit.
So, okay, if we decide not to take your interlocutory appeal, does that mean you can bring an independent lawsuit order to get around, you know, the limitations the courts impose on interlocutory appeals?
The answer, I think, is yes, because that defeats the adequate remedy. There is no adequate remedy because this issue will never get reviewed until the case is over.
Yeah, but if there's no adequate remedy, that's one of the grounds. It's not complete, but that's one of the considerations in deciding whether to allow an interlocutory appeal. Every argument you can make for this lawsuit, you can make for allowing, for not only asking Judge Anderson the enforcement suit to dismiss, but if he refuses, asking us to review it.
I would disagree with that, Your Honor.
Look, if you can't achieve something with motions and appeals in the enforcement suit, that's no good reason to allow you to double the number of suits.
Your Honor, in the General Finance Corporation decision, which you published and which you wrote, you noted that there was a vehicle in the connection with the subpoena enforcement action by which the litigant could challenge the propriety of the process which brings him to the court. You noted that, and you suggested that that was the relief, that was the remedy. There is no device like that in this case. There is no remedy like that.
Well, because the law doesn't want to provide a remedy which consists of bringing, when you're, look, that's why we have counterclaims, right?
And it's not an adequate remedy, Your Honor.
We don't say that if you're sued and you have a claim against the plaintiff that arises out of the same transaction, we don't say, oh, go bring your own suit and we'll have two lawsuits. You say that's a compulsory counterclaim. You bring it in the same suit. So you're going against, you know, 100 years of legal reform which tries to consolidate proceedings and not multiply them.
Two final points, Your Honor. They would object, the SEC will stand here and tell you they object to us filing a compulsory counterclaim because they claim their sovereign immunity. So no, the answer is not they're saying you can file a compulsory counterclaim.
Look, if there are good defenses against your effort to get out of this, off this flypaper that Mr. Buntrock has fallen on, if there are good reasons not to allow counterclaims, interlocutory appeals, all sorts of other things, you shouldn't be allowed to circumvent them by bringing another lawsuit, because then we're going to be besieged with lawsuits by people who don't think they have enough remedies by way of defending against the suit.
But I think you've captured the essential point we're trying to make, and that is in the enforcement action, there is no adequate remedy at law. That's exactly what we're saying. There is no device by which to raise this challenge. You've just stated it yourself. We agree with that. We agree that the enforcement action is not an adequate remedy at law, and that's why we have the separate action. So on that narrow point that we're arguing...
Okay, but I mean, just think of the absurdity of it. You're in front of Judge Anderson. He has the enforcement suit. Now you're saying there's nothing Judge Anderson can do for you unless you file a mirror image lawsuit against the SEC. And what sense does that make? Why not have it all done as part of one case?
because we are not getting discovery, we don't have a right to an appeal, and the full relief we seek will be denied if it's not decided in advance of the decision on the merits, period, end of sentence.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Rush.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Next case for argument is...